Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Harold Bayan, VP Products and Marketing at Baffle. Welcome, Harold.
Hi, how are you doing, Matt?
Doing very well. Before we dive into the main part of our discussion today, would you be able to give everyone a little bit more of a background in terms of who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is obviously Harold Bayan. I've been in the cybersecurity space for around 25 years at this point. Working on both the vendor and the non-vendor side, have done a lot of work in kind of data containment strategies, I guess, is kind of the overall theme that's kind of been running through my career. So I spent a lot of time in data loss prevention, worked in mobile security for a while on different types of containerization technologies, have worked in different security spaces, and now obviously worked at CASB vendor for a while as well. And I've been at Baffle for a while, which has a very unique approach to what we would call, you know, simplified data-centric protection, which is really, you know, as one of the CISOs that we work with talked about, making encryption stupid simple, is kind of the way he put it. And so we do that with an added kind of twist in that we also have a secure computation capability, which allows us to keep data encrypted through all phases of operations. And so, yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell, I guess.
Yeah, so as you kind of just laid out, it's a very long and detailed focus in terms of protecting data. And, you know, I guess before we kind of start pulling some of those topics apart, I think it would be helpful if you could to just lay a groundwork in terms of what encryption actually means and what it actually does. Because I'm starting to get the sense that it's a word that's just thrown around and there's this expectation that it protects the data, but maybe people don't fully appreciate what it actually does and how it actually works.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's an incredible, you know, very accurate way of stating kind of what people think it does and what it actually does. I mean, the common definition that we see around encryption is it's a process for encoding a message or information or data. And, you know, if you look this up on the internet, they add in such a way that only authorized parties can access it and those who are not authorized cannot. And I think the lay definition or simplified definition is encryption makes data or information unreadable. And I think that that is true in many ways and it's untrue in so many ways. And I think that that's where a lot of the confusion comes in the market is people immediately, you know, say, oh, well, it's encrypted, so it's protected. And the answer is absolutely not. It's encrypted at certain levels in terms of how a system or how a person may access the information. So that doesn't necessarily mean that it's protected. And so there are a lot of classic examples of data being protected, but still absolutely available to, you know, virtually anybody, an attacker or an authorized user on a system, and there's a ton of breaches, as we all read about every day, where quite frankly, the data is encrypted, but it doesn't matter. It's, you know, ultimately accessed in the clear and taken. And that's kind of, I think, part of the endemic problem to why we continue to see all the breaches day in and day out.
So kind of to dive into some of that detail, how or what are some of the means by which information that people might think is encrypted can still be accessible?
So typically, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of the vendors who have built out technology built into, you know, operating systems or cloud controls or, you know, databases and the like, to their credit, have made it incredibly easy to implement a, you know, what I would call a basic encryption capability. And that is, I have an encryption need. I want to push a button or check a box and encrypt my data and feel like I'm protected. And in many ways that is protecting the data at a certain level, and it's protecting, and it's in many ways also complying with a lot of regulations. But I think that where the rub in that is by making it very easy, it is, you know, very transparent to systems and to users. The downside of that is it's done absolutely nothing to actually protect the data. And I think that's kind of the misnomer in the market or in general awareness is you check this box and you feel protected. It's kind of like you flip the bolt, you know, the deadbolt on your front door and you feel protected and that's fine. But what if somebody was already in the house? Right. And the challenge with it is at a more technical level, what it's doing is it's protecting data at a container level, meaning that it's either protecting physical hard drives or it's protecting a database container. And, you know, the running joke that we have about that is we call it it protects against the Tom Cruise threat model. And the Tom Cruise threat model is where the attacker is crawling through the air ducts and dropping from the ceiling of the data center and stealing your data by taking out the hard drives and leaving the, you know, fully fledged secured facility. And that's just not how data is being stolen today. It's, you know, over the wire, through the internet, somebody's being compromised and somebody gets access to a system and then they're exfiltrating data. And so the common encryption schemes that most people are familiar with do absolutely nothing to protect against the way people are hacking data and the way data is being breached today. And that's, you know, just the misnomer in the overall education of the market.
So if kind of the standard approach to encryption isn't actually protecting against the nature of the threat, how can protection be enhanced then?
So the way that we think that protection can be enhanced is twofold. And there are a lot, and it shouldn't say that everybody thinks that this is sufficient protection. There are a lot of organizations that have already recognized this need, and they're protecting in a way that looks at specific data fields or has a or utilizing methods that attach encryption to a specific piece of data. So there's typically two forms. In the document world, so yeah, I think you're a lawyer by trade, for example. So in a file-based world where there are a lot of files being exchanged, there are ways that you can attach encryption to actual files. And then in more of a kind of healthcare-related angle things, patient records and data in that form can be protected at what we would call the record level or the field level. And that is, you know, what is my medical record number? What afflictions do I have? What prescriptions do I take? First and last name and the like. And so people who are embarking on a method to really protect data at the field level or the record level per se have recognized that, you know, if you don't do that, then basically the data sits there and clear. So that's one method to utilize encryption to better protect the information. And the other is really tying it to some type of access control. You know, I think the challenge overall that we have as an industry across multiple industries, and it's not just healthcare, is a million security products out there. There's a million ways to skin the cat, and everybody has a slicing away at a layer of the problem. But if you really look at the problem, the way you need to look at this problem is it is somebody accessing a piece of information through some type of application and ultimately getting to that data. And that's where a lot of the access aspects of this come into play as well in terms of who is the user? Where are they coming from? What application are they accessing through? How much data are they asking for? Is the data sensitive? And, you know, I think that the overall industry needs to evolve to kind of recognize that that is an end-to-end channel that needs to be protected. That's kind of our thinking on it.
So kind of, as you said, given the different approaches and all the different products that are out there, is there any need for some baseline standardization, or is it more just getting people to think about the issues more holistically and, you know, kind of, I think, as you were just saying, creating some of those end-to-end channels?
No, I think that there needs to be a baseline standard. I mean, I'm not in favor of, you know, over-regulation by any means, but the reality is that in a lot of ways, people or industries don't move unless they're forced to. For better or for worse in some cases. And so, you know, you see that within, you know, all the data privacy regulation that's coming out, whether it's GDPR or the California, you know, Consumer Data Privacy Act or, you know, the financial services industry in New York. New York DFS has a whole kind of mandate around security now. And, you know, we fully expect, you know, 30 or 40 states to pass their own privacy regulations. And so I do think that there needs to be a data standard. And I think the data standards, I mean, are the standards, you know, need to take into account. They're often very vague. They don't necessarily get prescriptive. And maybe that's where things tend to fall down. And so Perhaps maybe in some cases they do need to be more prescriptive. There's always a danger in that, but I definitely think that the standards help drive people. And we've definitely seen a shift in thinking around this whole notion of data shredding or the right to be forgotten that's kind of been introduced by GDPR and some of the mandates. And, you know, as the fines continue to roll and continue to grow, we'll see, you know, I think that there's definitely going to be a shift in some of that thinking.
You know, and actually that reference to, you know, that the GDPR right to be forgotten is an interesting one, because it's, while that gets a lot of attention, there are also a large number of exceptions to that right. And it seems, you know, just kind of given the focus on healthcare, where I'm typically working with people, like, you know, that's one area where you can't ask for the data to be forgotten. And which kind of makes sense if you think about it, because if you know, a healthcare entity had to dump all the information it had about a patient, that could have an impact on continuity of care. But to the broader mm-hmm. privacy and security point that you're making, it would also seem like that is an inherent loophole within the system in terms of how the data can be secured, or although I guess maybe loophole isn't necessarily the right framing, but it's you know, just kind of underscores the need for organizations to have robust tools and processes in place to keep their level of security at a more up-to-date standard.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think at least you know, by incorporating that into kind of your data protection strategy, you're really looking at least facilitating the capabilities, you know, when it is mandated. And you're right, there are, you know, loopholes or exceptions, and obviously there's downside, obviously, if you eliminated the history of somebody's medical records. And so perhaps in some ways too, that also kind of, you know, begs the question. Obviously, there are certain places where that right to be forgotten should not be implemented, but there are probably many others where it can or should be in other places, right? And it's not necessarily in the medical record history, but perhaps it is in privacy as it relates to healthcare data that's being collected for analytics, or that may be, you know, being shared across parties for other purposes. And so, you know, there's been examples of that. Like, I think that I believe that there was the mobile device thing where certain apps were feeding health information to, you know, on specific mobile phone iOSs and things like that. So without mentioning vendors, just to be careful, you know, there's definitely scenarios like that. And so those are probably places where the right to be forgotten could be applied, right? And that isn't necessarily going to impact somebody's kind of immediate, access to appropriate medical health care, right? Which is ultimately what the overarching factor should be here.
Yes. No, pointing out that nuance, I think, is very important, because it's, as you're trying to carefully draw a distinction between actual healthcare providers or organizations that are delivering healthcare to maybe potentially more consumer-facing type products. For those of you just joining, I'm talking with Harold Bean from Baffin. We're talking about encryption and the role it plays in security. And kind of backing up a step to what you were saying a minute ago, Harold, in terms of creating some level of standardization, which will likely have to be, or will likely be driven by either a combination of legislation and regulatory action, or some type of movement by the government. You're highlighting the fact that a whole host of states, and, you know, I think it, as you mentioned at this point, it's over a majority of states have either enacted or are considering legislation in conjunction with different laws across the world. How do the differing standards there help or hinder the ability to focus and protect data?
Well, I mean, I think that they overall, I think that they help. I mean, I don't think that they're necessarily hindering. Maybe perhaps one way that it does is that it can put a halt in terms of assessment of the overall project scope and implementation scope. That could be a hindrance. There's, you know, when you have multiple regulations internationally and across different state jurisdictions and across a federal jurisdiction, there's a fair amount of work also ensuring alignment across kind of the differing regulations and kind of what is the minimum bar across all of them, or, you know, maybe a certain state may have something that is more stringent in terms of requirement than the bulk of the other states. And so those types of things can be hindrances from kind of establishing common ground of what your implementation might or should be. But ultimately, I think that it raises awareness, which I think is critical. You know, I think that GDPR is raising awareness. I mean, you know, we weren't really even seeing, you know, Apple privacy commercials until, you know, a couple months ago or a few months ago. And so, you know, and Facebook apparently didn't have privacy principles until a few months ago as well. So I think that those are things that are definitely driving awareness across the enterprise, across, you know, organizations that handle sensitive data, and ultimately the consumers who kind of are demanding those features at some level or exiting the, you know, I guess, interacting with the different consumer models that are handling their data.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point that the public discourse and just the general attention to privacy has definitely accelerated very rapidly over the past year plus and has arguably driven pretty rapid response to that as well. And I would tend to agree with you. It does feel like the implementation of GDPR was a major impetus in that, as well as I think publication or publicizing different events where information has been compromised. So kind of thinking about the state of where we are, and I think we were touching upon this a little bit earlier, but would like to kind of tease it out more. You know, from your perspective, what can be done to enhance efforts and practices of protecting data that's entrusted to an organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people need to recognize. Well, first off, I think people need to recognize their gaps, and so I think that there needs to be an executive level awareness. I mean, I've spoken to some chief security officers that have ultimately had to present to their board of directors on what are the different methods of encrypting data and what does that actually mean from a risk mitigation standpoint. And I can tell you that that's very much the exception, I think, than the rule across most organizations. I think that, you know, it's hard. I mean, encryption is complex. It's a complex concept. It's complex to implement. You know, there's very little about the overall encryption capability set and encryption industry and the capabilities that have been brought forth that have made this easy, other than the checkbox that we were talking about earlier, which again does incredibly little to nothing to protect against a modern day breach. And so I think that that general awareness of what the gap is, what people need to do from a risk mitigation strategy is kind of the first step. And then the second aspect of this is really where and what data needs to be protected and how do we go about actually getting that rolled out and deployed. And along with that kind of comes I'm trying to think of the right way to say this, kind of a discourse with the business and the business owners. And the reason I say that is because part of the challenge and the reason people opt for the easy button is also because when you encrypt data, which is obviously transforming the readability of the data or making it unreadable, in many ways it can also break things. And I think that that's been the fundamental Achilles heel. In many ways, I think everybody recognizes if I encrypt or use stronger encryption or use a data-centric approach to encryption, yes, the data is protected, but yes, it also can break things in all these other places. And I think going forward beyond kind of the overall gap analysis that needs to happen, so there are a number of secure computation capabilities that are basically facilitating operating on encrypted data. There are a multitude of privacy preserving analytics methods that are being used. So Apple, again, has espoused a privacy preserving analytics model for a number of years in terms of how they actually aggregate data off of people's cell phones and still preserve privacy. And, you know, those computational methods are, you know, they're still in early stages in many ways, I think, but they're available. And so the seemingly what was impossible or seemed impossible last year or definitely 10 years ago, or was a theoretical approach, you know, 10 or 20 years ago, which was effectively, how can I perform analytics or computation on unencrypted data without ever decrypting the underlying values or violating the privacy and confidentiality contract? Some of those capabilities are available today. And so they enable use cases, particularly for healthcare, things such as, you know, how many people with a given medical affliction do we have in this zip code, right? Or how many types of emergency room cases of these types of category of medical incidents have we had in these particular zip codes or across these hospital networks? Different types of analytics like that that don't violate privacy but allow for an aggregate method for providing intelligence or information that may be valuable to a healthcare professional are things that can be performed using some of these advanced forms of encryption and newer technologies that facilitate that. So I think it's kind of a, I don't know, crawl, walk, run. So crawl is, you know, do your gap analysis, understand the risks, and walk, start implementing and figure out where there's kind of challenges, and run is, you know, what is the latest and greatest that's going to really help us run the business or run our healthcare services in an efficient and intelligent fashion without breaking everything underneath it.
No, and you kind of directly went into an area that I had a question about, which is, you know, as you were saying, you know, the ability to use the data has been cited as an argument against having encryption in certain places. And, you know, I know you were just talking about maintaining privacy while doing some analytics, but what about the argument that I see within the healthcare industry, which is, you know, say you're in a hospital and you need to be accessing the full scope of data. Is that an area where the technology is developing where it can remain encrypted and you're accessing maybe the pieces that are necessary, or is that still, you know, kind of a tension as you were describing where you know, we understand the best practice would be to be able to encrypt and protect the data, but given current technological limitations to avoid impeding the delivery of care or the accessing of information to inform care, it has to remain unprotected.
Yeah, I think the tension is still largely there. Ultimately, the healthcare provider needs to see the information at some level, but obviously keeping it protected through the majority of its life cycle, right? As it's being accessed or as it's being operated on is something that can be facilitated today. I think the one place that is emerging, there's two areas in emerging. One, the privacy preserving analytics space that we were talking about earlier is one. And then the other is what I would call autonomous computation or autonomous computing. And so obviously the world is, you know, you see it with autonomous driving, right? I mean, the world is moving to an automated space. And I think that in terms of healthcare delivery services, not that we're going to automate doctors or nurses, but the aggregating the information and enumerating kind of what services need to be made available to a given patient, say, you know, in a heightened state of alert or in a crash state, there are methods that people are looking at from an autonomous compute methodology that don't necessarily mean that somebody needs to be what we would call on the button, right? Where somebody needs to be clicking next or wading through the information. And so in those methods where systems are actually processing the information, there isn't really ever a human with eyeballs on the actual data until, you know, the provider, the immediate caregiver needs to make a decision. And, there are a fair amount of activities and services that can be provided in more of a, again, an autonomous or automated fashion that can also be processed on encrypted data without ever anybody laying eyes or hands on it per se. And so I think that those are things that are ways that we can, again, facilitate greater privacy, greater protection of the data, and mitigate a lot of the risk around data theft.
No, that definitely makes sense. You know, that type of an approach would also seem to be beneficial in helping to minimize an insider threat, because it's, you know, it seems like we've kind of been impliedly suggesting that, you know, the danger lies on the outside, but, you know, at least certainly for healthcare, insiders are always neck and neck in terms of an outside attack as the leading cause for a breach.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's just been growing in the percentage of the cause of a breach. We typically see that. And so, I mean, the insiders, you know, whether it's privileged access users or somebody who's more malicious, or, you know, probably the vast majority of it is also, you know, people making honest mistakes, right? Or errors just in terms of how things are configured or set up, or oops, I meant to follow a best practice for that, but I sent a ton of records out in the clear. You know, and it's also because if you really put it in context, I mean, a lot of people in the healthcare industry on the security side really think that the healthcare industry has been under attack for quite a while. And it's, you know, it's partly also because the level of the information around a given person, and also the value of the patient records is pretty astronomical. I mean, if you go into the dark web, you know, a patient with a terminal illness has, you know, that the value of that patient record is 10 times that of a normal healthy person. And so there's some money to be made there. And so given that, you know, people are going to go where there is money, and it's evidence in the nature of the attacks that we see today.
No, and I think that's a very good point, and it just you know, underscores and emphasizes why, you know, security needs to be taken seriously. But believe it or not, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Hiram Bien, for a great conversation today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Matt. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on, and great to have your more technical insights into the security side of things. And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.